If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Probably figure out some way to put that song on my alarm clock. Although I'd get up and start doing news, weather, traffic, and sports. It's 5:10. Good morning. How's everybody today on this Tuesday? My watch is still off one day because of leap year. The date is actually March 3rd, isn't it? My watch says March 4th. I have to fix that.
Yeah, I don't worry, get a new watch.
It's still not a smart watch.
It's a dumb watch. You know how you listen to certain things on the radio and on television, for that matter? You hear commercials, and sometimes you can hear them over and over and over again, and you don't really pay attention. And then one day, for some reason, you just pay closer attention. So that John Williams commercial for the Pain Relief Institute, that's kind of gone in one ear out the other. It doesn't speak to me necessarily. But for some reason, on the way in this morning, I was really focused on it when it came on the radio. That guy's a good salesman. I'm going to get knee surgery, even though I don't need any, just to go to that Pain Relief Institute. Sounds fantastic. Remind me when I buy some business, an advertiser, to have John record the commercial. It's very believable. It's like Paul Harvey. You know, remember, whatever Paul would advertise, I would want to buy a Schwinn, Airdyne, all those things.
So you're saying, in other words, he could sell a treatment for knee pain to somebody whose knees don't hurt.
Exactly. Yeah, I was ready to sign up.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. So if his career ever goes south, he could become a used car salesman.
Well, among other things. Yeah. Hearing about the coronavirus, and Steve Grzanich reported on the news a few minutes ago that the International Housewares Association said yesterday they're canceling this year's convention here at McCormick Place. That was supposed to be March 14th through the 17th. 56,000 people come in for that from 130 countries. And that's going to hurt here because the show accounted for more than 47,000 room nights at Chicago hotels. And then, of course, you get restaurants affected by that. It occurs to me that it's easier to call in sick these days, though, because nobody's going to question you. I mean, your supervisor would be very happy to hear that you're not feeling well and you're going to take the precaution of not coming to work for a while. I mean, really, you have a cold now, call in for a couple weeks.
therein lies the problem, though, Bob. I mean, I don't think any of us get a couple of weeks of sick time. So, and I'm sure you would be forced to take the 2 weeks.
Like you'd have to use your vacation time?
Right. Well, I don't know if you'd have to use your vacation time, but I saw this story yesterday, reporting on this yesterday about how we're going to deal with this. Because if we do have people who are being forced to stay away from work, told to stay away from work, and don't have sick time, how's that going to work? And then the people, those of us who do, and we run out of it, what's going to happen then? Lots of questions still unanswered about how this is all going to play out.
Well, companies should make a coronavirus exception to whatever their employee rules and regulations are, don't you think?
Yeah, so that people who, I don't know, what do you get a doctor's
take all the
note?
Time you want.
If you test positive, then you get a doctor's note, and then you get free 2 weeks, I guess. Well, I don't want to say free 2 weeks because you
at least
have coronavirus. But
yeah.
So it's, I think there's that discussion is probably happening in companies all across America right now.
Or if you don't know if you have the flu or, heaven forbid, you have this virus, you're not sure. you want to stay home. And every, that's what the experts say you should do. So you want to just be very safe, and you want to take extra time. So that's why you're taking 2 weeks for your cold, just to be sure. You don't want to infect the fellow employees. And companies should, you know, rewrite the rules and make sure nobody's penalized for doing that. We'll have to talk to the... who do I talk to about that? I have to. I can
you
go
mean
upstairs.
Here?
Well, yeah. Well, I'd like to change that for everybody listening, but I only have. I'm only in charge of this place, and I'm only in charge for 4 hours. That's it. I have control till 9.
You're in charge.
5 till 9.
Most of the time, nobody's here yet.
It's good to know.
If you want to win a prize for being the first caller on the radio, excluding news personnel and so forth, be my guest. 312-981-7200. We'll get to that shortly. 312-981-7200. That's our text number as well. And our email here, bobshow@wgnradio.com.
Get real in the morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN-TV morning news team, weekdays 4 to 10.
You'll see Courtney Guzman on that program as well. She's on the phone right now, reporting in. Good morning, Courtney at 520.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Well, we're trying to wake up here, and the news of the coronavirus out of Washington State is kind of troubling today, isn't it?
Yeah, we've had several deaths in Washington State, and the latest news here in Illinois is that we now have 4 confirmed cases, or maybe I should say had 4 confirmed cases. So over the weekend, you know that there was a gentleman in his 70s who was diagnosed with coronavirus. He is being treated in isolation here at Northwest Community Hospital in Arlington Heights. Now, we have learned his wife yesterday, we have learned she's been diagnosed as well. She's in her 70s as well. She's now the 4th case in Illinois. She is in isolation at home, both said to be in good condition. Now, you may remember we talked back in January when we had our first 2 coronavirus patients. That was a husband and wife team who were also being cared for at St. Alexius Medical Center in Hoffman Estates. That couple has since fully recovered. They're back out and about and doing well. Now, we have learned that there are some exposures to staff members and 2 students from the Arlington Heights School District, District 25. Letters actually went home to parents Sunday saying that there would be those 2 employees and 2 students staying at home because of possible exposure from a babysitter. That babysitter related to a healthcare worker who may have treated one of the coronavirus patients here at Northwest Community Hospital. In other news, there are at least 286 people that are being monitored in the state of Illinois for coronavirus, maybe possible exposure, and they're looking for symptoms. And again, if you're not familiar with the symptoms, we're talking about very similar to the flu, cough, fever, and difficulty breathing. The governor, Governor Pritzker, when he had his news conference yesterday, saying that you need to wash your hands. If you feel sick, stay at home, you know, and make sure you wipe down commonly used surfaces as well. But the state is working with the CDC to try to contain the spread of the coronavirus since we have these latest 2 cases here in Arlington Heights. And notice that all 4 cases in the state of Illinois that we've had so far have all been in our area, Bob.
Courtney, the latest cases around here, have the doctors said anything about how these people picked up the virus? Do they know?
Well, we know the first 2 cases. One of the woman actually went to China to take care of a sick dad. Now, we haven't heard much about these latest 2 cases in terms of how they picked it up. But we do know that, again, a number of people are being monitored. So it seems that it may have, you know, even healthcare workers are at risk. And so the state is saying they're trying to do all they can to make sure that these healthcare workers are protected. If they came in contact, then they're asking some of these healthcare workers to stay home and put themselves in isolation until the coast is clear. So it's about, a 14-day incubation period for coronavirus at this point.
Courtney Guzman, appreciate the report. Courtney, have a good day.
All right, you too, Bob. Thanks.
It's 524, and Mark in Hoffman Estates is our first caller, first civilian caller. Courtney Guzman, of course, an employee here, so she's not eligible for the prize. But you are, Mark. Way to go.
Good morning. How are you, Bob?
Good. You tell me. What's happening? What are you up to today?
Oh, on my way to work.
Where do you work?
I work for an auto dealership in Hoffman Estates.
Mm-hmm.
I've been with them for 34 years and just heading on into work again this morning.
So you sell cars there?
I'm a parts and service director for the dealership.
How's business?
Business could be better in the business. Auto business is a little slow right now.
Yeah, and why do we think that is? Anybody guessing?
Just a change in how things go. So it'll come back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, things going up and down. So
things always do. You know, in 2009, and the market crashed, and everybody was trying to figure things out. And I'm dumb when it comes to that. So I was paralyzed. I did nothing. Then a couple years later, people referred to me as a financial genius because everything came back.
That's about the same with me. I agree with you.
Mark, we're going to get you a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Go to AmericanWeathermakers.com. We'll send that out to you.
And that's awesome, Bob. Thank you very much. And thank you to everyone at WGN.
Well, we appreciate you, Mark. Hold on. We'll get all that information from you so we can get you your reward for being the first caller and for listening this morning at 525. Welcome back, Dave Ennett. He was on Northwestern basketball assignment. Well, you got to call a win, didn't you?
Yes, that was nice. That was
haven't
a very
many
nice
of those.
No, it had been, let's see, January 11th was the last time. So nice to see them get a win in Lincoln, Nebraska Sunday.
And in Illinois basketball, things are going well. They just signed the head coach to a new contract.
Yeah,
they?
Brad Underwood gets a 3-year extension. But what's interesting about it is that it's got automatic rollovers each time, or extensions each time that they make the NCAA tournament. So
that theoretically, could bode well for him.
Well, yeah, theoretically, he could. This could be a 10-year deal because
nice.
It would keep if it keeps extending every time they make the tournament and gets his. A big raise up to over $3 million a year. So good for him. He's done a great job with that program.
Yeah, they're having a great year. Hopefully it'll continue. Let's see, the Blackhawks back in action tonight, right?
Taking on the Anaheim Ducks. And, you know, a couple of the teams, well, one of the teams that they're chasing, for those who are still holding out hope that they can make the playoffs, lost last night. Nashville got pounded by Edmonton. And so that keeps them within 6 points of the Blackhawks. Now there's three teams in between, two of whom are tied with Nashville. So you need them to also kind of hit a lull. But six points with 17 games to go.
As they say in that old sports cliche, we just got to take care of our own business.
That's a good one. I like that, Bob.
Anybody listening to the sports world, feel free to use that. Time for Orion's Agribusiness Brief.
Good morning. Mixed markets at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange yesterday. In livestock futures at the Mercantile Exchange, the June lean hog contract down 15 cents a hundredweight, but June live cattle up the $3 daily limit, and the April feeder cattle contract up $2.50 a hundredweight. Grain trade yesterday at the Chicago Board of Trade. March wheat ended down 2.25 cents a bushel. But corn, the March contract up 8.5 cents, and March soybeans up 7.5 cents. Prairie Farmer Magazine yesterday announced the 2020 class of master farmers here in Illinois, something that the editors of Prairie Farmer started in 1925, and editors have continued the tradition annually since 1968. But the five names: John and Susan Adams of Atlanta, Illinois; Dale Hatton of Jacksonville, Illinois; Ted Mattes of Elmwood, Illinois; and Joe Pickrell of Buffalo. They will be honored in Springfield on Thursday, Thursday, March 19th, as recipients of the Prairie Farmer Master Farmers Award. And for you parents who are looking for a way to pay your kids' college education, this announcement yesterday, the IAA Foundation will award more scholarships and research grants thanks to the newly established Harris Thomas Endowment. As part of a planned farm gift from Jacqueline Thomas, the $1.1 million fund supports students with an interest in advancing agriculture. Congratulations to the winners when you receive the award, because we're still waiting for your names. That's AgBiz. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right, thanks to Orion. It's 5:41. As I look out the window of the Bob Surratt building this morning here at 303 East Wacker, I'm thinking, next week at this time when we look out the window here, will it be light? Because we have the time change this weekend, so that means we spring ahead. So 5:42 will actually be... Never mind.
6:42.
Is that right?
We spring ahead.
Yeah, we spring ahead.
So
yeah, and it's kind of getting light by 6:42 now.
Last night was nice. The sunset was pretty. Must have been, you know, pollution or something, but it was golden, and then it was light till like 6.
Right, so that'll be nice next week. The sunsets have been great lately. I don't know.
They have, yeah.
You know, it's usually a time of day I'm out, and it's been great.
Speaking of looking out the window here, we have a view actually behind us. Is we can see Navy Pier, and then in front of us we see parts of Michigan Avenue. And I see here where the real estate company Related Midwest has chopped the height of the two skyscrapers proposed for the former Chicago Spire site. They're trying to win approval for that development. The design by One World Trade Center architect David Childs of the New York office of Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill has been reduced to one tower of 875 feet, another 765 feet on that site at 400 North Lakeshore Drive. Ryan Ory reporting in the Tribune on this. So that's a big drop from the previously proposed heights of 1,100 and 850 feet. Also, plans for a hotel have been jettisoned. The plan is now for 1,000 residential units on that site. They had a big meeting the other night, and there were objections by neighbors regarding elements such as the height of the podium on which the towers would be built and security along the Chicago River. So I like that they're sort of downsizing a little bit here at 400 North Lakeshore Drive, because... You know, you've been to New York. You know, it's just like canyons of buildings. You can't even see any sky. So I like the fact that we can still see sky in Chicago. And, of course, helps to have the river running through downtown, so you have that space. But I don't want things to get too canyonized here. You know what I mean?
Well, if you think about it, 400 North Lakeshore, if you're along Michigan Avenue and any of those buildings on North Michigan, then you're... And you're looking towards Navy Pier,
mm-hmm.
then your view would be blocked out by those buildings.
Right, exactly. Uh-huh. The Chicago Spire, of course, would have been the world's tallest building. Now two shorter towers planned for the site have had limits placed on the height. I guess that's still just a hole in the ground, right? The 2,000-foot tall skyscraper that never got built. Let's see. A 76-foot deep foundation was laid before work was permanently halted because of the economic crisis in 2008. So now that's the latest for that site, 400 North Lakeshore Drive. If you if you're old school and still get the old newspaper, you'll notice the front page of the Sun-Times today on the masthead on the front page on top of the big bold Chicago Sun-Times lettering. They have a new slogan, one of editor and publisher's 10 that do it right in 2020. And what that's all about is the paper was nationally recognized by this organization as one of the 10 that do it right. And they've changed their masthead. So instead of the hardest working paper in America, their new tagline is one of editor and publishers, 10 that do it right 2020. Editor and publishers cited the Sun-Times and various people they have working at the paper here for their work. And I'd like to give a special shout out to somebody whose work I really admire. And from time to time, we have read the obituaries that Maureen O'Donnell writes, great life stories of people, fascinating. And she was cited. She's with the Society of Professional Obituary Writers, and she won an award for Best Short Form Obituary for her story of longtime diner owner, Sarkey. You know, Sarkey's up north in the burbs. Ever go to his place? I think he pronounced his last name Tashjian. But Sarkey's
the place in Evanston.
Yeah.
Yeah, northwest
famous
Evanston.
Spot.
Yeah.
I think it's still there. Sarkey
it's
died
there.
Some
it's,
time ago.
Yeah, it's still there.
So Maureen O'Donnell was cited for that, but all of her work is fantastic. And congratulations to all the Sun-Times people who were mentioned. And that included our pal Richard Roper, also Lauren Fitzpatrick, Nader Issa, and Stephanie Zimmerman, also Mary Mitchell, and ENP, that's that editor and publishers organization, for decades has been a national authority on the news industry, and they spotlighted various Sun-Times personnel and features. So way to go. Let's hope that we can keep our remaining newspapers healthy. Sun-Times, Tribune, all the suburban papers still going strong, like the Daily Herald. It's a tough time for those folks. It's 5:53 almost. I believe that I have thought about one of these health tips about avoiding the coronavirus that has been ignored, that has been forgotten. We've heard all about, you know, how you should not shake hands and how you should wash your hands and touch buttons with knuckles and sneeze into your arm. We've heard it all, right? Well, guess what? There's one thing that everybody forgot to remind you of, and I'm going to tell you this, and you will never forget this, at least not while the coronavirus is around. Think about this. When you stop at the gas station, fill it up, how many people are touching that pump? How many people are touching that handle, right? Huh?
I always wear gloves when I fill up with my gas.
You do?
Yep.
I mean, but you do that all the time because you're cold.
Yeah, I'm cold, but I do it like running gloves if I have, because I don't want to smell like gas.
Oh.
Yeah, because I always get gas on my hands somehow.
Yeah, the only problem is I think the coronavirus will jump onto your gloves, and then when you take your gloves off,
oh,
it will jump
on.
Onto your hand. Yeah. I think that's right. Seriously, I think it can stay on surfaces for up to 96 hours.
That's why you're better off just you know, use Purell or a hand sanitizer after you fill up.
Okay.
I did see a recommendation from a doctor that you wear gloves when you're pumping gas.
You did?
For that reason.
Really?
Yes. Not for your hands smelling like gas, Mary.
Well, okay. But now we can't find hand sanitizer in many places.
Yeah, there's a run on it, isn't there?
Yeah.
I bought a crate last week that I'm selling out of the
crate?
Back of my trunk.
Yeah. Grzanich is on the street with the stuff.
My wife went to about 6 stores and finally found it Saturday and bought some for our kids.
Yeah,
you know, and I mean,
there's a run on Lysol, and Amazon's cracking down on some price gouging for some of those products too. I like the smell of gasoline.
I do
really?
Too, but
yeah,
not over my hands.
I don't mind.
I feel like I'm on fire.
Well, I ran out of Jade East and High Karate, so I'm using a gas cologne right now.
Nice. I was wondering what smelled like 87 octane in here. Or is that a little high?
We'll just call you Ethel from now on.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, man. It's 6:05. But anyway, I thought of that last night when I was getting some gas. And I thought, uh-oh, wait a minute. Everybody touches this. So fortunately, I had some hand sanitizer with me. Yeah, it's going to be a problem because I'm going to run out pretty soon. I would think that huge supplies of the stuff will be coming back into stores soon, but right now there's a lot of empty shelves, I know, unless you see Steve Grzanich walking around.
For you,
making an offer.
For you, the price, a low price of $10 a bottle.
Oh, thank you.
You want a little of this?
Oh, I've got some still.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got
all
some
right.
with me still.
You know, $3, Bob.
Such a deal.
A little squirt.
All right. Let's get to the money department today and find out what's going on with the markets, Steve.
Well, things look a little bit better from global markets this morning, and could be another volatile day for Wall Street. Right now, we're seeing that lead that we had early on evaporate just a little bit in terms of the implied open on the Dow, now in the negative. So we'll watch that very closely on the Market Outlook, sponsored by Associated Bank. A couple of other things that could move the markets, including vehicle sales for February, which are due today. Sales of cars, SUVs, and light trucks increased to 16.8 million in January. Auto industry analysts will be watching to see if that growth continues. Vehicle sales coming out at about 5 o'clock Chicago time today. Lots of things on the earnings calendar as well. Baxter, Hewlett, Packard, AutoZone, Kohl's, Nordstrom, and Target reporting quarterly earnings. Target has just reported better than expected earnings, but missed on the revenue side. In Japan, consumer confidence numbers impacted the Nikkei there this morning, which was off dramatically, aside from some of the other markets in Asia, which actually gained overnight. And that's business.
Hello, it's 6:09. All right, I figured out what it's going to look like outside next week after the time change this weekend, thanks to a couple of texts we got chastising me for being confused about this. Every year I get this mixed up from 815. If it was dark at 5:30 a.m. today, it'll be dark at 6:30 on Monday after springing forward, but it will be lighter later in the afternoon. And then another text, come on, Bob, really? You can't add an hour to the clock? It will be dark longer in the morning at first and light much later at night. All right, I think I've got that straightened out now.
Just don't look at your watch next week, since it's got the wrong date on it anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
You have the wrong time on it.
Yeah, my leap year messed things up.
And you all, you talked us all into it, too.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. We all just
what?
Like,
we
oh, yeah.
just sitting here going,
well, yeah,
sure,
yeah,
that
Bob,
sounds
that's
good.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be lighter.
All I know is it's going to be harder to wake up next week, because your body will be thrown off. If it's like my body, a finely tuned instrument, you don't recover on Sunday. It takes a few days. You're hungry at different times. You know, if you have to get up like at 6 in the morning, actually you're getting up at 5 in the morning on your body clock next week. You know what I mean? I just agree with me.
No, I'm done agreeing with you.
Yeah, you know better now.
I'm just going to sit here and nod. Yep.
Oh, man. Almost 6:11 now. This, the coronavirus madness it's spreading its tentacles everywhere. The opening of the Japanese baseball season now in doubt. Let's see. Yesterday they had a meeting in Japan, and the preseason games are being played in empty stadiums there.
Right.
In Japan, the regular season starts March 20th, so they still don't know what they're going to do there. And that's going to be a growing concern about any mass gathering of people. And we talked to Dean Richards about this. It's already affecting the entertainment world and some concerts around the world, and sporting events are next. I imagine there's some very nervous Chicago sports executives right now. Because if this thing, you know, gets out of hand, people are not going to want to show up at any mass gathering.
Well, I don't think it's just Chicago, and I think the NBA has told players not to high five fans.
Oh, no kidding!
And they're actually discouraging signing autographs or taking things from fans,
mm-hmm.
having them hand items to them to sign. So, and there are some players who've said they're not signing anymore. So,
wow.
Yeah, they may get to a situation where the government says no gatherings over a certain number of people.
Mm-hmm.
Health departments issue advisories for that kind of thing. Doesn't necessarily, I guess, mean the game can't still be played, but you just won't have any fans in the stadium.
Well, but think about what's coming up here. You have March Madness. You have the NCAA tournament is just a couple of weeks away.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I saw a story over the weekend. There was a call to play those games in empty arenas. And I can't imagine it.
Yeah, that does not seem right. That would be very strange. You're watching that on TV and hearing silence. Well, maybe you could pipe in the crowd noise. You know, run an audio track.
Virtual cheerleaders.
Well, let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Yes.
Did I see something encouraging today? Where is it? Yeah, I think, wasn't today, where is it here? I think, is it the first day, lowest number of new cases in more than a month reported today. The number of deaths from the coronavirus in the U.S. growing to 6. 4 new cases were reported in Chicago, but the country reported its lowest number of new cases in more than a month today. So maybe that's the beginning of something good.
Weren't there fewer new cases in China? They're seeing a decrease now in cases there. So
It's getting better there at the source.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the cases in China, they specifically yesterday said that more cases were reported coming to China from Italy than originated in China. Was the story that I saw, because Italy, northern Italy especially, has quite a few cases there, and there's, you know, growing concern about coronavirus there in Italy.
While you were talking, Steve, I just suppressed a sneeze, because I thought if I sneezed on the air, I would Chicago would be in a panic.
I would go running out of the studio, I can tell you that.
Yeah, Grzanich and also Mary very happy there in other studios in the morning, not in here with me, 6:14.
We had a couple of sneezers in here yesterday. Just remember, sneeze into your arm, cough into your arm. Yeah,
that's right, so. Yeah, because it's airborne, right? You can catch it that way or by surface contact.
Then throw away your shirt.
Burn it.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Now the top 6 at 6 with Bob Surratt on WGN Radio.
At 6:18, here's what people are talking about today. The president and members of his cabinet met at the White House with executives of 10 pharmaceutical companies to learn ways to speed the development of a vaccine for the coronavirus. Later in the day, Vice President Pence said, quote, "It is remarkable to think there may very well be a vaccine going to clinical trials within the next 6 weeks," end quote. As of now, there are no proven treatments. However, a potential drug that may be used in a vaccine has been identified by a team including the University of Chicago and Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. Those scientists say their findings suggest drugs that had previously been in development to treat the SARS outbreak could now be developed as effective drugs against the coronavirus.
Now, page 2.
It is Super Tuesday, the biggest day of the presidential primary. Millions of voters expected to go to the polls. 14 states voting today. Joe Biden was formally endorsed by his former rivals, Amy Klobuchar, at the rally last night in Dallas. And Senator Klobuchar, who suspended her campaign earlier in the day, told the crowd that Joe Biden is the best Democratic candidate to unite a divided country. Surprise guest at that rally last night, Beto O'Rourke.
The man in the White House today poses an existential threat to this country, to our democracy, to free and fair elections. And we need somebody who can beat him. And in Joe Biden, we have that man. We have someone who, in fact, is the antithesis of Donald Trump. Joe Biden is decent. He's kind. He's caring. He's empathetic. At a time that this country is so polarized, so deeply divided, we need somebody who can bring us together and heal us. We need somebody who can reestablish the moral authority of the United States. We need somebody who will fight for democracy here and abroad, because democracy is under attack here and abroad. We need Joe Biden.
Although there are many people who believe we need somebody who doesn't begin every sentence with the word look. That's a new college drinking game, I think. Joe Biden starts every answer to a question with look.
Yeah, check that out. Who does that remind you of?
Someone who starts...
Former Cubs manager.
Lou Piniella. Oh, that's right. He did say that, didn't he? Yeah. Look, I think that just gave him time to think. I think that's a little trick. I'm going to start doing that.
Look, I'm in the middle of the top six at six.
Page three.
And this is an interesting broadcasting story. Chris Matthews, after growing criticism over a spate of embarrassing on-air moments, including a comparison of Senator Bernie Sanders' campaign to the Nazi invasion of France, is leaving. He's done. And last night was it. Fast. Here's a little bit of what Chris Matthews said last night on MSNBC right at the beginning of his broadcast.
After a conversation with MSNBC, I decided tonight will be my last hardball. So let me tell you why. The younger generations out there are ready to take the reins. We see them in politics, in the media, in fighting for their causes. They are improving the workplace. We're talking here about better standards than we grew up with. Fair standards. A lot of it has to do with how we talk to each other. Compliments on a woman's appearance that some men, including me, might have once incorrectly thought were okay. We're never okay. Not then and certainly not today. And for making such comments in the past, I'm sorry. I'm very proud of the work I've done here. Long before I went on television, I worked for years in politics, was a newspaper columnist, an author. I'm working on another book. I'll continue to write and talk about politics and cheer on my producers and crew here in Washington and New York and my MSNBC colleagues. They will continue to produce great journalism in the years ahead. And for those of you who have gotten in the habit of watching Hardball every night, I hope you're going to miss me because I'm going to miss you. But remembering Humphrey Bogart and Casablanca, we'll always have Hardball. So let's not say goodbye, but till we meet again.
That was a bit of a surprise last night to Chris Matthews' colleagues. That was the beginning of the broadcast, and then there was a commercial break, and then Steve Kornacki appeared in the anchor chair. And apparently crew members at Hardball learned of their boss's exit only about an hour and a half before that statement. Chris Matthews' exit, and he'd been there since 97. It came after a weekend of discussions with his bosses, 3 days after GQ magazine ran a column by a freelance journalist about her own sexist run-in with Matthews in the makeup room before appearing on his show. Sounds like the management played a little hardball with Chris Matthews. And I was reading about her article. Let's see, where is it here? She said that, here it is. In 2016, this was the GQ story, February 28th. Freelance journalist Laura Bassett said Matthews behaved inappropriately toward her when she was on his show. She wrote, in 2016, right before I had to go on and talk about sexual assault allegations against Donald Trump, Matthews looked over at me in the makeup chair next to him and said, "Why haven't I fallen in love with you yet?" When I laughed nervously and said nothing, he followed up to the makeup artist, saying, "Keep putting makeup on her, I'll fall in love with her." Another time, according to Miss Bassett, Matthews stood between her and the mirror and complimented the red dress she was wearing for the segment. He said, "You going out tonight?" Now, at the risk of being attacked by my wife and also Mary here, it seems, at least compared to, you know, Charlie Rose, Matt Lauer, and the rest of Harvey Weinstein and the rest of that list, it doesn't seem like that much, does it? I know. Here's Mary, here's where you say that I'm a sexist pig.
What did I do?
No, I mean, well, what Chris Matthews was accused of doing. It seems, I know, it's a new era. What can you say?
Well, you've never even told me I look nice today, so you're okay.
Well, because I don't want to be giving my farewell announcement here right after I do that.
Getting a little worried.
Page four.
Okay, here's a reminder, and it's not a happy one, but Cook County Treasurer Maria Pappas said about 300,000 property owners must pay the first installment of their Cook County property taxes today to avoid hefty late charges imposed by state law. Payments made at CookCountyTreasurer.com have to be made before 11:59 p.m.
To whom it may concern.
The Supreme Court announced it will decide the fate of the Affordable Care Act after lower court rulings found the law's individual mandate unconstitutional. The High Court's ruling could uphold or alter the Obamacare law, changing the already controversial conversation around health care here in the U.S.
Stand by for news.
And finally, number six, owners of iPhones could get $25 from Apple after the company agreed to pay up to $500 million to settle claims over intentionally slowing down older phones to preserve older batteries. Apple and lawyers representing iPhone consumers agreed to a deal stemming from Apple's 2017 admission that it was slowing down phone performance in older models. Apple continues to deny wrongdoing and is agreeing to the payment to avoid the burdens and costs of litigation, according to the proposed settlement. $500 million is the fine to Apple. In other words, that's about 2 hours of selling iPhones it'll cost them.
And that's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Sirois on WGN Radio.
Good day.
And the soft cover edition of Ron Rappaport's book, Let's Play 2, is out today. The Legend of Mr. Cub, The Life of Ernie Banks. Ron, of course, one of our great sports columnists, was at the Sun-Times for a couple of decades, joins us this morning from someplace warm, I guess. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Bob. How you doing? Right now, it's someplace dark, but that's okay, too.
Yeah. Well, listen, Ernie Banks, I mean, like a lot of people in Chicago and in the media, I got to know him over the years, and because he was one of my idols growing up, I always turned into a 12-year-old around him. I never got over the thrill of Ernie Banks actually knowing who I was. And you sat with him and recorded conversations over a long period of time for this book. Was that the background here?
Yeah, the idea was, he was living in California where I am, and the idea was that we were going to work on an autobiography. And while we were talking, he got into some pretty serious stuff, some interesting topics that were sort of were underneath the legend, Bob, the Ernie Banks that we all knew, it's a beautiful day for a ball game. Ernie had a photographic memory. That's one of the reasons that he was so beloved, is that he would remember you from 5 years ago. Remember that, you know, your wife had been sick, or the names of your kids, that kind of a thing. But we were getting into some interesting things about growing up in Dallas and picking cotton with his dad and missing a year of school and never being around white people until he was in the Army, and his, you know, what it was like coming to Chicago and moving into a white environment. Those kinds of things that we don't always talk to Ernie about. And he was pretty honest with me, and I thought, boy, this is going to be great. An autobiography where we really dug beneath the legend, you know?
Yeah.
And then he pulled the plug, Bob, decided he didn't want to do it after all.
Why? Why?
You know, there were a couple of his wife out here told me that he didn't want to do a book. He liked the idea of a book. Hmm. And that, I thought maybe that was it. But I think that in the long run, he just decided that he didn't want people to know who he really was. The kinds of things we had been talking about, the disappointments and the difficulties of his life. For instance, he talked at great length about his feud with Leo Durocher. He went on and on and on with me. Well, he never spoke about that in public. Till the day he died, he never said anything. You know, Leo treated him just terribly, both in public and in the locker room. But Ernie never said a word till the day he died. Oh, Leo was just trying to motivate me. I was getting older. I needed a kick in the pants. Well, the truth was something far different. I just think in the end, he didn't want people to know anything beyond the myth and the legend that he had built up for himself.
You know, Dave Ennett and I were talking about the book here a week or so ago, and that is the revealing message of this book, that Ernie was a sad, at times, lonely figure, wasn't he?
Well, he was, and when you think about it, when you think about the image that he presented, always happy, always smiling, always upbeat, always optimistic. Well, nobody lives like that. We all have disappointments and problems and difficulties. And the problem was that Ernie hid it. He just hid it. He developed this caricature for himself. He hid behind this mask. And here's the problem. When you do that all your life, one of his twin sons, Jerry Banks, who lives out here, told me, you know, if you live in a caricature all your, you know, for so long, you become a prisoner of it. And I think that was pretty well said, because if you do that and you hide your real self from from the world. You hide it from yourself as well, and that can cause problems as well.
Ron, good morning. I know that Ernie wasn't the only player that Leo was tough on, but why did he treat him that way? Was it jealousy?
It was ego, Dave. It was Leo needed to be, the thing you need to know about Leo is he had this huge ego, more than anybody. He needed to be the biggest guy wherever he was. He needed to be number one. Now he comes to a situation where not only is Ernie number one, but he has the nickname for it, Mr. Cobb. So Leo would stand in front of the writers out on the field, you know, before the games would start, and he'd say, knock off that Mr. Cobb crap. Mr. Cobb, my ass. That kind of stuff. Well, very hurtful. We call him Gramps. Old man, that kind of a thing. He kept trying. He benched him many times, looking for another first baseman. Ernie always won the job back. But think about it. You're the icon. You're the number one guy in the franchise. And this guy comes in and wants to take it over. So what Ernie wants to put you down, Leo decided that to be number one, he needed to knock down the guy who was number one. So the truth is, he came to Chicago. He looked around, Leo did, and he saw that there were two guys who were revered and loved, and he went after both of them. One was Ernie, and one was Jack Brickhouse. He had a terrible feud with Brickhouse. Jack, you know, got along with everybody, couldn't stand him. Leo was really a tough character. But basically, it all came down to his ego, his needing to be the number one guy wherever he was.
It's a fascinating portrait of somebody we all think we knew, but when you read this book, you realize you didn't know Ernie Banks. Let's play two, The Legend of Mr. Cub, The Life of Ernie Banks, more with Ron Rappaport after a quick break. Ron, you go into Let's Play Two here and how that started, and it seems like there were several different versions, but maybe the true one was that one day he just said it. What do you think?
Well, the problem with trying to get to the bottom of it, and of course Let's Play Two is Ernie's enduring contribution to the language. You hear it all the time, not just in baseball, not just in sports, but politics. You know, years ago, Willie Nelson and Bob Dylan went on a concert tour of minor league ballparks around the country. Well, what were they going to call it except the Let's Play Two tour? It's that kind of a thing. Here's the reason there are so many stories about how it actually got started. The big reason is that Ernie never told the story the same way twice. Mm-hmm. He had a million different reasons. And the problem was that he always named a date. It was during the 1960 All-Star Game. He talked to Jack Quinlan. Remember Jack?
Yeah, my idol. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was in 1969 in July, and he was driving on Lakeshore Drive, and it was hot. Got to the ballpark, saw his teammates drooping and dragging, and said, let's play two. No, it was in August, and he came into the inner city, recognizing where he could see where he had come from, and it was sort of an epiphany. Mm-hmm. And he went to the ballpark and said it. The nearest I can figure is that it started in Houston in 1960. The Cubs are playing the old Colt 45s in this open ballpark with not a whisper of shade. You know, one of those old-fashioned ballparks with no deck at all, just completely open. All the stands were open. And it was miserably hot. And Ernie fainted during the first game and couldn't play the second game. So his teammates all came in and said, let's play two, let's play two. You couldn't even play one. So it had to have started before that. Somewhere, Billy Williams told me this story. It had to have started somewhere around 1958, 59, 60. But as soon as Ernie saw that, you know, that it was his signature phrase and people kept asking me about it, and just very, you know, cleverly, he just kept it alive by giving everybody a different story. And when I went to look it up, I would read references to it in various books and in magazine articles and in newspaper columns and stories along the way. And I could see how he had manipulated it. He just kept telling the story. Oh, people are interested in this? Fine. Well, I won't tell them the same old story. They won't be interested in that. So he'd invent something new. It was a beautiful example of Ernie's ability to sort of control the narrative.
Now, all of his hard times growing up in poverty, the racism he suffered in Dallas, helping his dad pick cotton, he never really talked about any of that or wanted to, did he?
No, he didn't really. He would talk a little bit. At one point, I talked to five of his high school classmates. I felt myself really fortunate to be able to find them. And also, Ernie's older sister, Edna, is still alive. Edna was the first of 12 kids. Ernie was the second. But I was able to find examples of him talking about it a little, that he would go out with his dad, and they would have coffee and something to eat before going out to the cotton fields, and how he kind of enjoyed it. But here's the thing. Ernie was a pretty good student. He was quiet. He never, not the kind who ever raised his hand in class. Ernie was a very quiet kind of guy who sort of stood aside and just watched. But he wasn't a bad student. Well, one year, his dad made him take an entire year out of school to go pick cotton. Mm-hmm. And they were very worried that would be the last they would ever see of him, and he would just have to help his dad, you know, make money for the family, which they didn't have much of, for the rest of his teenage years. Well, luckily, Ernie was able to come back to school and not only play ball, but graduate and get his career started. But I kind of shudder to think what it would have been like if he had just kept picking cotton as a teenager.
Ernie once told me that Jackie Robinson gave him this advice: just be quiet, listen, and learn. Is that true? Did that ever happen? Because as you say, Ernie kind of would change his stories over the years.
No, that was true. That I was able to narrow down. Ernie, after his first year with the Kansas City Monarchs, all of a sudden, the manager of the Indianapolis Clowns, Buster Haywood, tells him, hey, Jackie has this barnstorming tour where he goes all over the South mostly, actually ended up in California. They would play 30 games a year. It was the only way they could make any real money. They could make as much as they made during the season. And he wants you with it. He wants you on the team. And Ernie's response was, Jackie Robinson knows who I am? I mean, he was thrilled. So he shows up, and he plays with Jackie. And Jackie takes him aside, and he says, I like you. I like your approach to the game. I like your talent. I like your ability. I think you're going to make the big leagues. But here's what I want you to know. Don't talk. Just sit and listen. Just watch. And maybe Jackie was thinking back to his early days when he was so famously told not to respond to any racial taunts or, you know, any situations, to turn the other cheek. Remember, Branch Rickey told him that. And so that was the way Jackie broke in to the big leagues, by just being very, very quiet and careful and watching. Now, once Jackie retired, he became, you know, much more outspoken and voluble about racial issues and so on for the rest of his life. But Ernie saw this and watched. And now, so they go on this barnstorming tour, and now they come to Dallas, and his dad, who was a catcher for a Negro League's minor league team, essentially the Dallas Green Monarchs, comes down to watch. And Jackie and Roy Campanella and Don Newcomb all take turns telling Ernie's dad, Eddie, what a good player he is. And he said, my dad smoked 2 cigars that day, and the time it usually took him to smoke 1. He was so thrilled at listening to Jackie and these great Negro League stars tell him that his son was going to be a good ball player.
Well, I thought Rick Kogan summed up your book very well in his review in the Trib. He said, thanks to Let's Play 2, we can now remember Ernie as flesh and blood. There was a complicated and often melancholy man behind the sunny smile and the glittering statistics, a man worthy not merely of hero worship, but of our admiration and mercy. The book is Let's Play 2, The Legend of Mr. Cub, The Life of Ernie Banks, Ron Rappaport. A lot of fun in this book, but also a story of a guy who, as we said, was lonely, and as Ron writes, kind of was always on, probably to help himself deal with the loneliness and sadness that he felt. Don't you think, Ron?
I do, and I also feel, you know, that this is a different portrait of Ernie. You're right, there is a lot of fun. You know, a lot of his great moments on and off the field, and, you know, telling the story of the 69 Cubs, I guess I wouldn't call it fun exactly, but it was good to relive those days.
Well,
you know?
But I like, you know, Fergie Jenkins giving him the nickname AM/FM because you couldn't shut him off. And then you've got a story in here about Al Spangler, who eventually played with the Cubs, but when he was an old Colt 45, he said, you know, you'd get to first base and Ernie would be there telling you it's a nice place and the weather is great and we ought to play 3. And meanwhile, you're trying to get the sign from the third base coach. and you tell Ernie to please shut up. It's just such a great read. Congratulations on the book, Ron. And if anybody missed it when it came out in hardcover, you can get it now in softcover. Let's Play 2, The Legend of Mr. Cub, The Life of Ernie Banks. Great talking to you again, Ron Rappaport.
Yeah, Bob, thanks. And congratulations on the new show. You know, I feel I've been talking to one Chicago icon about another. So
you mean Dave Emmett? Yeah, he's with us every day.
Absolutely.
Be well.
It's great to be on with you guys. You know, it was fun getting to the bottom of who Ernie really was. And I don't think that knowing, you know, some of the darker sides and some of the problems he went through makes him love us, makes us love him any the less.
Makes you love him more. Hope to see you down the road, Ron.
Okay, Bob. Great to be with you. Thanks.
As you heard Steve report on the news, a powerful storm system produced at least two tornadoes that struck central Tennessee early this morning, including one that caused significant damage near downtown Nashville. A very familiar voice to you is in Nashville, where I hope he's sleeping late now. Good morning, Spike Odell.
Robert, how are you this morning?
We're good. The question is, how are you guys doing? Were you anywhere near the tornadoes?
You know, my phone had just—it's blown up this morning from all the concern from everybody wanting to know how we weathered it. I got to tell you, in honesty, I never heard a thing last night. I slept through it all. But then I'm south of downtown Nashville. I live in the Brentwood area. If you know where that big WSM radio tower is along the interstate there, if you ever drive south, uh-huh. I'm very close to that, and the damage was north of the actual downtown area, a couple of blocks. If you know where the new Sounds baseball stadium is in the Germantown area, that's where the bulk of the damage was in Nashville itself. And then it went over towards Mount Juliet and Lebanon, too. So it's devastating, Bob.
So we're hearing so far seven people have died, but that number could go up, right?
I was just going to say that. I just got a feeling it's going to go up. I know they're looking for some trapped people. I just heard the news report saying that. And you know, with the invention of drones, with you know everybody's got a drone with a camera on it now. I am just flabbergasted by what I'm seeing on television. It is just incredible damage.
When did this hit? It was after midnight, right?
Yeah, but if I looked at it right, it's about 4 o'clock. In the morning, my time. I got up about 5. I still get up early and turn the TV on, and whoa, wow. I had no idea.
Yeah, Spike, you can sleep late now. It's okay. It's allowed.
You know, it's just in the DNA, I guess. I still get up early. But, we are just reeling down here. Like I said, I've spent an hour just answering emails and stuff, so I appreciate everybody for your thinking of us and your concern for us, but this is going to take a little while to dig out of, man. You talk about a super Tuesday. This was a super way to meteorologically welcome the morning, I'm telling you.
Hey, Spiker, glad you're okay. Was this, since you've been down there, has the city of Nashville been hit by anything like this that you remember?
It's kind of a magnet. I remember when I was on the air up there, I called down here once when a tornado hit because my son was going to college here.
Oh, right.
Excuse me, I've got a cold. My voice is breaking. I'm going through puberty here. I remember that. And when I first moved out here, we had a tornado that went past us a couple of blocks where one family was killed. So it's a magnet for tornadoes down here.
Well, everybody here is happy that you're okay, and we are concerned with the folks in Nashville this morning, of course. And everybody around here also says hi to you, Spike Odell. They miss you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Hi to everybody up there. I appreciate everybody's concern. And if you can, say a prayer for these folks down here. A lot of folks are going to need it. Boy, I'm looking at a hotel here that looks like it just got blown up pretty good. Wow.
Yeah,
incredible. I know right where that is.
We'll be seeing those images on the news all day today. I feel like I should be calling in on your show, Spike. I'll be honest with you.
You getting used to those hours, big boy?
You get used to feeling sick. That's what you get used to, as you know. But by the way, would it kill you to send me a box of Goo Goo Clusters occasionally? I love that's my favorite candy made right
really?
There in Nashville.
Oh, yeah. They got different flavors and everything. Yeah, I think they're made in Chattanooga. But, yeah, we do go through our share of Goo Goo Clusters. We love it, yeah.
It's good stuff. It's Nashville's Spike O'Dell, and we love keeping up with you on Facebook, too. So all the best to you and the family down there.
Thanks, buddy. And again, thank you, everyone, for your concern. I appreciate it.
And Jen Sabella is here, the co-founder of Block Club Chicago. We call it extremely local news. Let's get right into the neighborhoods first. Boy, the lakefront has taken a beating, hasn't it, Jen?
It sure has. And the city's favorite dog beach is not exempt. Montrose Dog Beach, it's actually people come from all over the place to visit this beach. Just a lot of space for the dogs to run around. It is missing 3 feet of beach right now. It's just covered in what they're calling lake balls, which is just debris of just
garbage
and ice and just gunk from the lake. It looks like hairballs all over the lake if we're going to be on the dog beach theme.
Lovely.
Yeah. And the alderman up in the 46th Ward, Alderman James Kappelman, they're a little panicked because this not only is something that neighbors enjoy, that people move to Uptown to be close to this beach, but people come, like I said, from all over the place to visit. So they are making a game plan for this summer. It looks like even if the lake recedes a little bit, they are going to lose some beach, so they might take over part of the People Beach. There are usually these little barriers that right now, if you go and look, they go so far into the lake. But that typically is on the sand, and that separates the people from the dogs. They're going to have to move those way up, way back, and they might give the dogs a little bit more room to roam. So the humans might have a little less space.
And heaven help us if we get more of those storms and high waves along the lakefront.
Exactly. So the Army Corps of Engineers and the Park District, they're saying, you know, we're doing our best. We're studying this, trying to figure out what to do, but in the meantime, the people in the 46th Ward are trying to figure out, okay, what can we do to keep this beach open? Because this U.S. Army Corps of Engineers study is going to take a while. Whatever they plan, it's going to be a more long-term solution. So in the short term, it might just mean scooching the dog beach over a little bit onto the people side.
At Montrose. Okay, and in Logan Square, the city's only circus has officially arrived, hasn't it?
This is so bizarre. They've been open since 2015 in this beautiful 111-year-old church in Logan Square at 3324 West Wrightwood, and Aloft Circus Arts has been teaching people how to do the trapeze, tightrope walking, juggling, all these like kind of lost arts, lost performance arts. So they've been getting more and more popular, and they have little performances where their students can, you know, show off their very unique skill set. And recently they had more than 100 people pack in there for a show, and the city was like, you don't have the permits to be a venue. So the owners of the Aloft Circus Arts finally got their venue permit, and now it is the only like fully functional circus school and performing venue in the city of Chicago. So there's the circus is in town, and it's in Logan Square, and they're going to be having more performances, adding more infrastructure to the church. If you go inside, it is beautiful. It's like all of the original like 110-year-old church interior, but then they have these big beams where they set up the trapeze and the tightrope, and it's a very unique space.
Who would have thunk it on Wrightwood, right?
Exactly, at 3324 West Wrightwood in Logan Square.
Over in River West, a lot of people are familiar with the Matchbox. What's going on with that place? Tell the story there.
So the Matchbox is beloved by journalists, so it's a favorite of mine, and a lot of other, actually, journalist Dave Hoekstra, who used to be the Chicago Sun-Times, broke the story last night that the Matchbox has been sold. It has been in the same family for 25 years. Jackie and David Gerviser have owned it, and David has had some health issues, so they've been stepping away and leaving the day-to-day operations to longtime staffers. And Tony Mata, who is the longtime general manager over there, he's been there for 20 years. They closed the Silver Palm last last year, about a year and a half ago, which is the neighboring little rail car. If you remember, they have a sandwich called the Three Little Piggies that the late Anthony Bourdain said was the greatest sandwich in America. But the Matchbox is known for, it is like a tiny, tiny space. You could fit maybe like 20 people at the bar. And as you get back toward the bathroom, you really got to squeeze if you want to pass somebody by and get into the restrooms. But it is like the most cozy, just classic Chicago spot. They have really delicious cocktails, and it has been sold. So the guys who bought it, thankfully, are longtime Chicago bar owners, and they do not want to change it. So Kevin Killerman and Greg Weinstein bought the bar. They own Casey Moran's up in Wrigleyville, and the Blind Robin in Ukrainian Village. And they said, you know, we're going to fix the roof, we're going to fix the mechanical issues inside, and we're not going to mess up everybody's favorite little tiny bar.
we should hope not. That's at the northwest corner of Milwaukee, Ogden, and Chicago.
Yes.
Matchbox. Let's move over to West Diversey now, and tell us about Patrick Burger.
So this is a diet that I had not heard of before. It is, a lot of people give something up for Lent. Patrick Burger gave up eating for Lent. He is just on a beer diet. He is the owner of he is the owner of two Chicago bars, Kaiser Tiger and Patty Long's up in Lincoln Park. And he said 2 decades ago, he heard about this thing that 17th century Pauliner monks did, where they survived only on beer for 40 days. And he was like thinking about it, and he had some weight to lose, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to try this.
No.
So he's already been 20 days in. He's lost 18 pounds. His diet consists of 4 beers a day, black coffee, a ton of water, and vitamins.
Light beer? Do we know what he's drinking?
He is drinking actually the kinds of beer that these monks drink. They brewed some kind of like historic classic beer in conjunction with a Grand Central Brewing, which is in Westtown, and they made these like special throwback beers, and they're not light beers, but that is where he's getting his nutrition right now. And he feels great.
wait a minute. How many beers a day?
Just 4. So he said his wife was like, you're not going to leave, you know, raising the kids and running the business to me. So you better be able to function. So he has been, he gets up, he has his coffee, has his water. And at the end of the day, he has his 4 beers, and, he's down 18 pounds. He actually has a doctor's appointment. He has not consulted a doctor. He said he thinks that his doctor would tell him not to do this, which I think any doctor would. But he's going to get some blood work, and he said as long as everything comes back okay, he's going to keep it going for the full 40 days.
I hope you do a follow-up. I want to hear about Patrick Burger. He owns Patty Long's and Kaiser Tiger.
Yes, so he's surrounded by great food smells all the time. They're known for a lot of like meats and sausages at Kaiser Tiger, and he has to just smell it and can't eat, and he said that's been pretty tough.
Yeah, Kaiser Tiger over at 1415 West Randolph, and Patty Long's 1028 West Diversey. So he is showing up for work. He's in these places right now.
Yep, and he said both his wife and his general manager of the bars, they're like, you know, you can't just fall apart now and lay down because you're tired. You gotta step up. So he said he feels great. He said the first 2 weeks were the hump, like getting over the not eating solid food hump. Mm-hmm. But now he's feeling like he's ready to do it.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he's also staying close to the men's room during this period.
Exactly.
All right, Jen Sabella, thank you. Block Club Chicago reporting our extremely local news. We'll talk to you folks tomorrow.
Yes,
thank you, Jen. It's almost 7:29. After the news, we'll talk about a couple of things, one of them being Real ID. There's still some confusion about this, and Jesse White's press secretary will be with us to answer questions. If you have any, feel free to call or text at this number, 312-981-7200. I actually caught part of The Bachelor last night because my wife was watching it, and I was requested to sit and watch with her for a while. And part of it last night was kind of disturbing. Let me read this story from Variety this morning. When the women of Peter Weber's season of The Bachelor gathered in a soundstage in Los Angeles to recount their time on the ABC dating competition program, it wasn't just details of what happened inside the mansion that they discussed. Host Chris Harrison brought former Bachelorette Rachel Lindsay to also bring to the forefront of the conversation the unspoken consequence of being on the show, online harassment. Lindsay discussed the onslaught she faced after starring in season 21 of The Bachelor before she received her own season of The Bachelorette, making her the first black bachelorette in the history of the show. She read a few of the comments some of the girls from the current season starring Weber had received, and they're pretty hateful. The crowd proceeded to cringe as Lindsay teared up while reading other messages that echoed the same tone. But although Harrison and Lindsay acknowledged the messages held tones of hate speech, they did not call them out as racist. The new segment in the infamous Women Tell All special came to fruition after Sydney Hightower voiced the problems she'd faced regarding hateful messages she'd received from Bachelor fans. So as I was seeing this and hearing this, I said to my wife, isn't this going to give more people the sort of green light to send these terrible messages on social media? Doesn't that just make the problem worse? Because any idiot who sends messages like that is not going to watch what the women said last night and think, yeah, maybe this is stupid and a terrible thing to do. I'm going to stop. So I don't know if they should have done that.
Yeah, why bring it up at all?
Exactly. You know? So, Mary, you didn't see last night, huh?
No, I didn't have a chance to see it. I was going to watch it today, but I don't like the Women Tell All segment.
Oh, that's a regular feature?
Yes, they always do it right before they announce the actual person who becomes, you know, the winner, the engaged person or whatever, which is, I guess, next week. But yeah, they just, it's, I don't know. I just don't like it because they're always bashing each other and going over what happened in the house early on. And, you know, it doesn't even matter, really.
They ran bloopers last night, which I found really
amusing.
They do that all the time, too?
Yeah, they do the bloopers. And usually there's animals involved. Were there animals involved jumping out in some of the Caribbean islands they run or something?
Yeah, there was somebody spilled a drink on some guy. And then, you know, they were grabbing his butt to clean it up.
There's always hot tub incidents, you know.
As I mentioned before, you know, when I watch, all I'm thinking about is, first of all, it seems very scripted and phony, and like everybody's just trying to get into show business, but what do I know?
A lot of it, that's what it is, and they become social influencers, or they already are, some of these girls, and we'll see. Did they announce the new Bachelorette for next season?
I went to sleep. I'm not sure.
I know who it is.
They call Marianne.
It's all over the place. Her name is Claire, and she's 38, and I'm so happy it's one of the older bachelorettes that are going to be on, because that's great.
All I know is at one point last night, they panned over to an area where all of the women were sitting together, a lot of them, and it looked like a meeting of Fox News Channel anchors.
With a lot of cleavage, I'm sure.
743, what's the deal with Real ID? Lots of questions about it. And I have a few myself. My first one for the press secretary for Jesse White, who's going to join us momentarily, is there any chance that they're going to push this deadline back? Right now it's October, but I think there are a few issues. And a few things I know you want to know. If you've got a Real ID question, you can call or text us at 312-981-7200. And from Secretary of State to Jesse White's office, let's say good morning to Dave Drucker, here to tell us all about the Real ID program. How you doing, Dave?
Good morning, Bob. Very well. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, a pleasure to have you here. For Illinois residents who fly domestically, effective October 1, the federal government requires you to use a valid U.S. passport or obtain a Real ID from the Illinois Secretary of State's office. Are they going to stick to this deadline? There has been talk around the country that we may need an extension. What have you heard?
You know, the airlines and some of the airports have asked Homeland Security to look at the idea of pushing back that October 1st date. We do think that was a good idea, but our total focus, Bob, is getting folks ready for October 1st to be able to get them through. We have to operate under the assumption that there's not going to be an extension.
As I understand it now, if you want to use your passport when you fly, you don't need the Real ID, right?
That's correct. A passport is a Real ID compliant document. So that will get you on an airplane after October 1st, as will a military ID and a global entry card is also acceptable. We'll get you through.
You need, if you want to use your passport, you need the passport booklet, though, don't you?
Actually, I think the card would
the suffice. The card is, yes. will suffice.
Yes.
Okay.
And one should think of this in terms of a domestic situation, because if you're flying internationally, or frankly even to Canada, Mexico, or the Caribbean, you're going to need a passport to get out of the country.
Here's a text from Wally. Could you ask the Secretary of State spokesman if a truck driver can get a real ID at a commercial driver's license facility?
Yes, they can.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and pertaining to Real ID, if my driver's license is due for renewal in November, does getting Real ID replace the need to renew, or do I do both?
It depends on whether they're getting a license or an ID card itself, Bob. What we're experiencing is that we're getting a lot of people that are coming in outside the time frame, that they're coming in outside of a year before the license is renewed. They would pay $5 if they're out of the cycle, but they would have to come back then and pay the $30 when that period is up, which would be the next renewal.
From the 815 area code, my daughter has her permit now and will be getting her license in August. Will she automatically get a real ID, or do we need to meet all the requirements listed?
Going through the process now, she should make very clear when she wants the license that she wants a real ID. She probably has submitted a lot of those documents already to get the permit. But when, and I would stress this for everybody in the audience, when they go to the facilities, be patient and express to them that you want the real ID as opposed to a standard driver's license. When you go for the real ID, Bob, it does require bringing in extra documents, where the standard license you can pretty much renew very quickly.
So let's talk about the documents you have to bring in.
Sure.
You have to bring in something to prove your current address. And what else do you need?
Well, I think of it in terms of categories. The first category would be either a passport or a birth certificate, one of those two documents. You don't need both, one of those two. The second category would be a Social Security card or a W-2 that's got the SOCH on it. And then the third category would be mail. We would accept utility bills that are within 90 days, bank statements, voter registration card. Two pieces of those would be required when you come in.
Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I was just going to say, thank you, Bob. If the listeners don't remember anything that I've said, if I'm that forgettable, well, what they should do is go to our website, realid.ilsos.gov, and there's an interactive device there where they can get the specific categories and all kinds of documents that are acceptable in those categories.
Okay, I'll repeat that for you in just a sec. A number of people have been confused about marriage licenses and names that are different on birth certificates than other documents.
Right.
Can you clear that up?
Sure. Good question. What we need is to account for the name change that takes place. What people can do, or what they need to do, frankly, is bring in the marriage certificate for the woman who changes the name. So for each name change, hopefully there aren't a whole lot, that they would bring in the marriage certificate showing the name change.
Here's a text from 847. How much more does this cost over a regular driver's license? Also, I'm due to renew my license in early December. How soon could I do the real ID so I wouldn't have to go back again in December to do it all over?
The price will be the same. It's $30 for 4 years. And anybody can come in within a year of when the license is due. And actually, in terms of the real ID, you can come in at any point at this time.
I want to take a couple of calls.
Absolutely.
Let's throw on those headphones there. Dave Drucker is here, press secretary for Jesse White. And let's see who's been on hold the longest here. Okay, go ahead. Mark in Buffalo Grove, what's your question about real ID?
Hey, good morning, Bob and Dave. So I went through the process a couple months ago at the Deerfield facility and also got a state ID as well. And it was only recently when I looked at both documents that my driver's license number is incorrect. It is off by one digit. So I'm not eager to relive the three-hour experience. Is there somebody further up the food chain I could work with? I'd be happy to send photos of both documents to double-check against the database. What do you suggest?
Is it possible we can get your information and we can talk off the air?
Absolutely.
We'll work on striking that.
Great. Hold on, Mark, and we'll try to take care of you. This is Russ calling from Tinley Park. And what do you need to know about Real ID, Russ?
Yes, good morning. I have Real ID. I just got my driver's license in the mail. My wife has had hers renewed They both look the same. So how do I tell that I really have the real ID that they said I have?
The gold star up on the right part of the real ID is an indicator for anybody in the public that you're presenting it to that that's a real ID document.
There you go, Russ. Thank you. Mary, hi, and Wilmette. What's your question, Mary?
My husband can't stand for a long time, and I'm wondering if there's a place other than the driver's license facilities where he could get a real ID.
We are limited to using the physical buildings. That is a federal standard that it's got to be a location that's secured by the local office. But one thing Secretary White has done to make a priority in this administration is when seniors and people with disabilities, people who have difficulty standing for periods of time, are brought to the front of the line when they get to the facility. And I'm sure that they'll be very sympathetic to your husband's situation, and we'll do everything we can to help them.
Appreciate the call, Mary.
That's good to know. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Hi, Sherry and Aurora. What do you need to know?
At what age do they need the real ID to fly?
That's a good question. Anybody under 18 does not need the documentation if they're flying.
So under 18, you don't need it. 18 and over, you do.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Sherry. That was a good question. Appreciate that.
Bob, if I could mention one thing. When people do go to the facilities, we just strongly encourage them to be patient. You know, some of the places are busier than others, and to make sure they've got the right documents when they come in. The last thing we want is to send people home.
Yeah, I think that's where the confusion is, because you hear these stories about people who show up and then they get turned away because something wasn't right about the documents, and then they have to go back again. Nobody wants to do that.
No, and the standards are set by the federal government, so it's not like Secretary of State employees are arbitrarily saying, this is good and this isn't. We have a very specific area that we're limited to dealing with.
Dave Drucker is the press secretary for Jesse White, and here is that that email, well, not an email, the website where you can get all of your questions answered, realid.ilsos.gov, realid.ilsos.gov. Remember that Illinois SOS part easily, because we're all sending out the SOS about real ID, aren't we? Dave, since anybody works for Jesse White has to tumble, will you be like doing backflips out of here now?
I'll do my best. I think of myself more as a stumbler than a tumbler, Bob.
Yeah, me too. All right, well, keep in touch, and we'll pass along any questions. I know we've got somebody on hold for you right now, so appreciate you clearing up real ID. Yeah, it's going to be a situation, I know, where when we hit like August, September, there are going to be big crowds at all the facilities.
Yeah, that's a good point, Bob. And I just would stress with our listeners here, you know, that they think through thoroughly if they really need to do it. If you've got a passport or another document that's real ID approved, you don't really have to go to the facility and get a new driver's license. Or if you're just if it's somebody who's just going to the drugstore to pick up prescriptions, you don't need a real ID. The standard license is good.
Hey, I'm just thinking, do I want to fly with the actual passport? Some people don't, but, well, now you know. Yeah. Now you know. Thanks, Dave. It is 8:11. Happy Super Tuesday, March 3. Dean Richards joins us now to talk about entertainment. And, man, I really like that Inside the Actor's Studio program with James Tipton. Did it continue? Is it still on, Dean?
No. Well, I think reruns may be on, but he stopped. James Lipton actually stopped in 2018. Kind of went into a semi-retirement. But would you agree, one of the best interviewers in the business?
You know, they were fascinating programs, and he was so odd. It was wonderful,
right.
And the big stack of index cards.
Right. He started that show in 1994. It was also a class for graduate students of the Actors Studio Drama School. Bradley Cooper was just one example of somebody who was a student who eventually came back to be interviewed as an A-list guest. But he asked the most interesting, to me, the most interesting probing questions, and really dug in. If you were a film fan, really dug into the nuances of filmmaking and performance and so forth. That's why it became one of the most popular shows on Bravo. James Lipton died yesterday. He was 93 years old. His wife said that he had bladder cancer. But he was, in addition to being a great interviewer, he was an academic, first and foremost, but also an actor, a script writer, a choreographer, a lyricist, an author, a producer. And he talked about all the impersonations that people did of him. I guess that's the highest honor, you know, when you do something, if you get somebody spoofing you like that. Will Ferrell, most notable on Saturday Night Live, who used to do a dead-on James Lipton. And Lipton said that he loved it, that Will Ferrell was one of his close friends. He enjoyed the impersonation, and it would be worth your while today. A lot of it, I was going to play some audio of it, but it sort of gets lost without actually seeing Will Ferrell in the costume and his facial expressions. Go on YouTube today and look it up, and you'll get a good laugh somewhere today for that.
Yeah, I mean, James Lipton is over-the-top serious intensity. Was just fabulous.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Timothy Hutton and what he's denying today.
Yeah, this is a story that broke a couple of days ago in which a woman came forward and said that she was raped by the Academy Award winner, Timothy Hutton. Just yesterday, Timothy Hutton said that he's filing a defamation lawsuit against her after BuzzFeed published these allegations. The woman said that Hutton and another man sexually assaulted her in a hotel room when she was 14 years old, never came forward, never said anything about it because she assumed that nobody would believe her. But Hutton is now saying that this is a failed extortion attempt based on something that never happened in the first place. He went to the FBI. He signed a sworn statement and has filed a criminal complaint against her, saying that it's an extortion attempt. So no word from any of the lawyers involved. They're trying to get this article taken off of BuzzFeed because they say it's not true.
Okay, coming up.
Happy news.
Yes.
Happy news. Good morning, everybody.
Kanye West's daughter, Michael Jackson's son, and James Bond news from Dean Richards. Dean, I've got a text here. This is something else we can Google and look at today. James Lipton had a great guest starring spot on a couple episodes of Arrested Development. He played a prison warden trying to get his screenplay made into a movie, and that sounds great. I got to watch that.
It's hilarious. He had a small role in Will Ferrell's movie Bewitched. The movie was awful, but it was fun just to see James Lipton, step out of his comfort zone a little bit. Also, if you're Googling around looking for James Lipton today, remember when Conan O'Brien used to do this thing called In the Year 2000?
Of course.
Where he and Andy Richter, his partner, would do predictions of things to come in the year 2000, which sounds funny now, 20 years later. But James Lipton did one of those in the year 2000s with Conan years ago, and it's also a riot. So, when you get bored today at work, in a bad mood today, something's going wrong, Super Tuesday's not working out for you, you're developing an unexpected cough.
I've got my day planned.
You've got something to laugh at.
All right, what's the James Bond news today?
Well, speaking of coronavirus, the studios behind the new James Bond movie, which is scheduled to come out in early April, April 10th, are being asked by James Bond fans to postpone the opening of the movie until summertime, when they say it's less likely that the spread of coronavirus could happen in a crowded movie theater. They say, they're saying it just takes one infected person to spread the virus in a theater. It's less likely to be as prevalent as it is right now. And the biggest James Bond fan club blog, which is called MI6HQ, says they are urging the movie studios behind this, Universal and MGM, to postpone the opening from April to sometime in June or July. It's been no word from MGM and Universal putting this movie out. They haven't made any comment about it, but they have canceled publicity tours for the movie in China, South Korea, and Japan so far. And, we're hearing things all the time of things that are closing, events that were supposed to happen that are now not going to happen because of the coronavirus. But it also got me thinking about going to a movie theater, which are not known to be the most meticulously clean places. I mean, they're okay,
mm-hmm.
but it's not like they go through and sanitize the theaters after each showing. They sweep up and, you know, get the obvious stuff out of there. I wonder if theaters are seeing any effect of this. I wonder if people are, you know, if ticket sales are down in theaters, in, you know, in the theater district for live productions, if they're taking any new precautions to protect people going to see movies, plays, concerts, you know, things like that.
People are thinking twice about getting into any area where there's a large crowd. It'll be interesting to look at box office numbers here going forward, won't it?
Yeah, I'm
going
to check into it today to see if that's the case. I went to a screening last night. I don't know if any of the people around me noticed. I was wearing a beekeeper suit sitting in the...
I know. They wouldn't have thought any different anything was different.
Yeah.
Kanye West's six-year-old daughter is rapping now.
Yes, of course. What six-year-old doesn't? This is little Northwest. Kanye West every year puts on a big fashion show during Paris Fashion Week. And he was putting on his show last night, showing his line for the new season. And instead of just having music playing as the models were coming out onto the runway, a little six-year-old Northwest came out on stage first, and she provided the music. I think we have a little clip of that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Walk to the street. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. Cool, cute, cool, yeah!
That's
water
cute.
Bowls! Water
That's adorable.
Bowls.
Yeah. When is her concert tour beginning?
she nailed it out there. She did a really cute job, and you know these very professional looking models are all strolling around this little little 6 year old out on the runway singing like that, and then proud Papa Kanye came out, ear to ear grin, so proud of his little girl chip off the old block.
Yeah,
you know, we haven't seen any bizarre behavior from her to see if she's picked up any other of Kanye's traits.
She's only six.
No latex clothing or anything taking after her mother, but as a six-year-old singing, super cute.
Also in the Showbiz Kid News Department, Michael Jackson's 18-year-old son.
Yeah, this you remember that famous video of Michael Jackson holding one of his kids over a balcony railing?
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, that was like 18 years ago, something
wow.
like that. That was Little Blanket, as Michael Jackson called him. Little Blanket just turned 18 years old the other day. He has, I think, wisely changed his name from Blanket now to Bego. Not what? Sure how much of an upgrade that is exactly, but
Bego,
B-I-G-O,
okay,
Bego. Uh-huh. So I think I'd rather be Bego than Blanket.
Why not just make it Bingo?
And people
bingo.
Can sing about
that's, that's
name.
Next.
Yeah. B-I-N-G-O. Yeah. So anyway, Bego for his 18th birthday bought himself a house in Calabasas, California.
Nice.
Which is would be like if, Bob, your 18-year-old daughter bought a house in Kenilworth, say, for example. It's an extremely exclusive area in California. This house is 6,400 square feet. It's a six-bedroom home, cost $2.6 million. Just a few blocks away from his grandmother's house, Michael Jackson's mother, Catherine, she has a little $10 million home that's just right down the street. Bego's house has a pool, a spa, an outdoor kitchen, a covered patio. His next-door neighbor is Dr. Dre. You know, kind of like all the rest of us.
Yeah, it's,
when we were 18,
it's a fun place to be. Halloween for trick or treat night, you
right.
see everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we let you go, Dean, I wanted to ask you something about Woody Allen. I was reading about his memoir that's going to be released April 7th, and then they mention here his latest movie, A Rainy Day in New York. Do they not show Woody Allen movies in this country anymore?
Oh, no, they still do. And actually,
I didn't. I mean, I know it was released in Europe, I guess, a while back. But has it been out in the theaters here?
Yeah, it had a very limited release when it first came out. Woody Allen movies do not get the kind of attention that they once did. It did come out. It was not very well received. And I suspect that that's why it didn't really get very much attention when it did come out, but it's still out there. I mean, some people, you couldn't pay them $1 million to go see a Woody Allen movie. Some people won't do it. Some people say that they separate the person from the art. You know, for me, really, just Woody Allen movies have not been very good for the last dozen years or so. I mean, they're kind of hit and miss, more often miss than hit. So yes, they are out there, but it's going to be very interesting when this memoir comes out, which is going to be titled Apropos of Nothing. It's supposed to be out on April the 7th, and allegedly he writes of his relationship with his family, his love life. The laughing in the background has nothing to do with the Woody Allen
story. Hope not.
Yeah, people are not laughing at
fun,
Woody Allen.
Fun times at Channel 9.
Right. I think the meds just took effect for some of the people here in the newsroom. But the he's supposed to talk about his relationships. So how deep he really goes into this and whether he really does talk about his, you know, his current marriage, his past marriages, etc., remains to be seen. But he is definitely a lightning rod for controversy.
April 7th, the book, Apropos of Nothing.
I
thought that the reason that I missed the movie, the latest Woody Allen movie, is because studios have backed out of production and distribution deals with him in the wake of all the allegations against him.
Yeah, there's always somebody who will put something out. If I remember right, this... I would need to check, but I want to say I thought this was an Amazon Prime project. It was one of the online platforms, not conventional movie studios, where this Woody Allen film was came and went very quickly.
Got it. All right. Thank you, Dean. Talk to you tomorrow.
Right.
We were talking earlier about how in some stores they're all sold out of hand sanitizer. There are a few recipes that are out there, and it's not difficult to make your own hand sanitizer. You may have to. Are you ready? Okay, first you need alcohol, and for some reason, the experts are suggesting you use plain vodka. There should be plenty of that around the station here in various offices. So you get some plain vodka. A cheap brand is fine, they say. Then some aloe vera gel, and an oil of your choice, lavender, tea tree oil, peppermint, whatever scent you like. And then you get a small 1 or 2 ounce bottle, plastic squeeze bottle or glass spray bottles work well. And this mixture, when you mix it all up, it's thin enough to be sprayed, though it will come out in more of a stream, they say. So I've noticed a couple of different recipes going around, but most of them, most of them follow those ingredients. So if you want to try that, because I know we were talking earlier about how it's getting harder and harder to find. And Dave, you found some. I don't want to say where you found it because then we won't be able to buy it, right?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't know if they have any. We could say it. It's my wife. We went on a search for it Saturday because she found it. It was sold out on Amazon, and it was sold out at our local drugstore and at Target. And she ended up at Bed Bath & Beyond, and they had it.
See?
Gave it away.
Go to a place that that's not a drugstore.
Right. It's not the first place you would necessarily think.
And I just want to remind everybody that I bought this a couple of weeks ago on Amazon. I bought a crate of it. The price is now up to $10.
So
you missed your chance to get in on it earlier.
Because Anich will be on the street.
That's for an 8-ounce bottle. That.
I said I need a 3-ounce bottle so I can go on an airplane with it. So he doesn't have any, though.
Here's another recipe that a lot of people say is easy and works. In a bowl, you combine 2/3 of a cup of rubbing alcohol with 1/3 cup of aloe vera gel, and then you just stir it and get it into a decant into a clean soap or pump bottle. So 2/3 cup rubbing alcohol, that's 99%. A third cup aloe vera gel, and then stir that up. I mentioned this earlier. You know how all the medical experts are telling us to wash our hands and sneeze into our arms, touch buttons with knuckles, and so forth. Don't shake hands. I still maintain they forgot one important tip. I haven't heard this a lot, but think about what you do when you stop for gas. That's right. How many people touch that pump handle? Okay, you've been warned now. I like when I point to people here, and yes, it's my turn. Let's get Dominique Kubalik on the phone from the Chicago Blackhawks. Say good morning to him, and congratulations on a great year.
Thank you. Good morning.
How does it feel to be mentioned as a possible NHL Rookie of the Year?
Well, obviously, it's something special, but I'm trying to don't really think about it because, you know, there's still 17 games in the season, in the regular season, so we're just trying to focus on that, and we'll see what's going to happen after that.
And when you're a rookie on the Blackhawks, do guys like Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane give you a lot of razzing in the locker room?
Yeah, I think for me especially, it's even better when I can watch those guys, you know, what they do in the locker room, what they do in, like, off the ice. So I think it's great for everybody who just came up to the league, for especially me and the young guys too. So we got a lot to learn from that. So that's great.
Dominic, 29 goals in your rookie season in the National Hockey League. You lead all rookie goal scorers. Did you expect to have this kind of success this quickly in the NHL? I mean, I'm sure you were confident, but were you this confident?
Well, I expect that, for me, the first point was to make the team, you know, so I didn't really think about how many goals I'm going to score, how many points, or where I'm going to play, or something like that. So I always went, like, step by step. So the first thing was obviously make the team, and that's happened. So really happy for that. And I hope the success is going to continue.
Some guys have a knack for scoring goals, and you seem to be one of those guys, and I think there was it was in Toronto where I think you had the goal that could be your signature goal of the season. That I think it was your second goal in that game. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah, you're talking about that baseball goal. Yeah. Whatever was it?
Well, some people might call it that. Yeah, it was kind of a baseball swing. I mean, did you play any baseball? How'd you come up with that?
No, we don't play that sport back in Czech. So, right. I mean, that was just lucky that I hit it well. So I was just trying to swing in the air, and I hit the puck. So that was a nice goal.
Hey, Dominic, a couple of weeks ago, we were at the game with my family, and it was a great Hawks win, and we had good seats. And you were one of the players mentioned at the end. What do they call it? The top three? Is that
three stars?
The three stars. Kubalik was one of the three stars, and you tossed your stick over the glass, and my daughter caught it. What do you think that's worth right now?
I don't know. I mean, it's always nice, right? When the fans are supporting you. So I'm happy that the fans are happy, and hopefully we're gonna get this on more.
And if you were to buy that stick, it's like probably a few hundred bucks at least, right, for one of those hockey sticks.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Dominic, playing on a line with Jonathan Toews, what's that been like? How much has that helped you this season?
Yeah, for sure, it helped me a lot. I mean, especially in the D zone, and he's a overall he's a great player. So it's nice to play with him. It's a lot to do my job, and I'm trying to. What we talk about. So the chemistry is there, and hopefully it's going to continue like that in the last game of the season.
Well, you guys, 6 points behind to get in the playoffs now. Is that it? All you have to do is just win every game, right?
Yeah, ex-
exactly. That's what we're going to do.
Attaboy. That's what we want to hear. You need a little help from those other teams, but you got to keep winning. How are you liking Chicago, and how are you liking this newfound recognition here?
Not really. I think there's a couple guys on the team who's more famous than me. So,
so Dominic, your hometown in the Czech Republic is Pilsen, is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
And you know there's a Pilsen neighborhood in Chicago, right? Have you been there?
I haven't been there yet, but I heard about it. I heard about the Czech. There's a couple of Czech restaurants, so it's always nice to have something from back home. So nice.
Now you walk down Michigan Avenue with your helmet on. They'll know who you are. Maybe with that hockey stick too. Dominic Kubalik.
That'd be easier, probably.
Yeah. Congratulations on a great season, and let's hope for a great finish.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks for talking with us. And it's 8:54 right now. I mean, sounds a little shy, a little bit. He's a young guy.
Yeah, 24. He's, just got his first hat trick last week against Tampa Bay in that big third period. Yeah, I mean, the guy's done some things, especially really over the last couple of, really the last month and a half. He's really become a force. And I think the Blackhawks were excited when they signed him, but I don't think they necessarily could have foreseen he'd have success. Maybe they knew, but I don't think most people knew he'd have this kind of season.
Yeah, it's been one that hopefully he will be the rookie of the year. He's kind of in the lead for that, don't you think?
Well, I it's tough. A lot of times that comes down to who's the clubhouse leader when they start when the polls start coming out. But he certainly has made up some ground, and if he keeps this up, there's no question he'll be a finalist for it. They've narrowed it down to three finalists for all the major awards. So, I mean, just to be one of those guys would be a big accomplishment.
Hawks tonight on WGN.
7 o'clock.
All right, here's another place where you can get hand sanitizer. Thanks to the texter from 847. Hi, Bob. The dollar stores have it also. Here's an email from Linda. Hi, Bob. This morning, this came in yesterday. You were talking about old nightclubs. I wanted to join in the conversation, but I couldn't remember the name of a night spot my parents used to go to. I remembered the name, the Martinique. It was a French name down on the south side. My parents would get very dressed up and go out for the evening. And thanks to Deborah for the email. I'm an early bird. Really enjoy your show. I loved your story about the... And then she's got all kinds of symbols here depicting a vulgarity. I loved your story about the blanks who drive BMWs. Remember, we talked about this. I'm married to one who is proud and smiling as I tried to repeat the description of who he actually is. Stop eating sushi and pizza. The nightmares are just flushing your system. Yeah, well, that's right. I had some nightmares after I had that for dinner, didn't I? Forgot about that. John Williams is coming up. John, I mentioned earlier that after hearing your joint pain relief commercials a couple of times, I have no problems, but I'm getting some knee surgery there anyway because you convinced me that it's great and a great place, so I'm just going to go do that.
I went
just for the fun.
I had him work on my elbow. My elbow's fine, but they're just such lovely people.
And
they've
apparently
got an expert to help you with the insurance, so I don't know why you wouldn't.
I'm buying everything you're selling.
By the way, I'm recommending to all my patients who chew gum that during the entirety of the Bob Surratt show, you wash your hands. And then for the rest of the day, your hands will be good and clean.
Okay, good tip.
Dave is using some Purell over there.
Yes, I am right now. Just based on your recommendation.
The idea is that if you sing happy birthday twice, that's 20 seconds. That's how long you should wash your hands. But who wants to sing happy birthday twice? We have a list of songs whose hooks are 20 seconds long.
Oh, perfect.
And we'll feature them, so we'll give you something else to play in your brain when you're washing your hands.
Boy, there is no...
That's the kind of service we're offering.
There is no off switch to your genius switch, is there? There's no off... off position.
Thank you for saying that. I think big thoughts, so you don't have to.
After the news, John's on the radio, and we will be back tomorrow with you. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.